Welcome to DraftSickos on the No Ceilings NBA YouTube channel and podcast feed. I'm your host, Maxwell Bumbach, and this is the show where we discuss everybody from the biggest of names to the deepest of sleepers. I'm going to be flying solo here on this episode. I would greatly appreciate any questions that you guys have in the chat as we go throughout this episode. Today, I'm going to be focusing on players who were eliminated in the first round of their respective tournaments. That's right. It's DraftSickos. We can't just stick to the March Madness stuff. We gotta dabble in the NIT a little bit over here, as we are wont to do. So that is the plan. We're going to start with some big names. We're going to save the mid-major guys. That's what we come here for. We come for the mid-major guys. We're going to save them for segment three. In segment one, we're going to talk Jeremiah Fears. And then in segment two, we're going to talk Trey Johnson. And then we're going to end with Rashear Fleming and Bennett Sturts. For questions in the chat, I would really appreciate if we keep those two guys that have been eliminated. And I'll just kind of go quickly on those. And if you have any questions about the guys that I'm talking about or comments, feel free to throw those up. I can post those on the screen. We can talk about them. You can kind of go back and forth and see where we're at. Let's lead off with Jeremiah Fears. Jeremiah Fears is a Joliet, Illinois native right down the road from where I live. So we're kind of in the bag a little bit there. We got to root for our guy. We love Joliet. We love the Amtrak station there. We love Donut Den. We love Baba's Cheesesteaks. We are a big Joliet household over here. I'm really intrigued by Jeremiah Fears, and what an interesting season this dude had. So during this time of year, our listenership really tends to skyrocket. We have more and more people coming in as their NBA teams are, let's say, playing a little bit less competitive, a brand of basketball. And they start to get interested in the draft. So if you are new, welcome. We're glad to have you here. Jeremiah Fears is commonly mocked in the lottery. He is a 6'4" guard listed. Might not actually be that. We'll see. Who played for Oklahoma this season. What makes Fears particularly unique is that he was a reclass. So this is a guy who started out, he basically should have been a senior in high school this year. It's the same kind of situation as Cooper Flagg, where like he's going to be one of the youngest guys in this draft. I'm assuming he goes in. I would be pretty surprised otherwise, just based on where the overall interest level seems to be at this stage in the process. The numbers are interesting. This is a couple of these guys we're going to talk about today are like, it's like a real Rorschach test of basketball and philosophy. Fears led the show for Oklahoma, 17.1 points per game, was not the most efficient, 43.4% from the field, 28.4% from three, and 85.1% at the free throw line. Let's kind of start with the scoring, and then we'll kind of dive in and dissect from there. What makes Jeremiah Fears so interesting overall first off, it's a guy who like started the season around age 17 and scored 17 a game in the SEC. Like that typically doesn't happen. It's usually really hard for freshman guards to play efficient basketball at all. Usually you see him catch on a little bit as the season goes on. But like if we look at, I'm just going to pull up Elliot Cadeau's numbers from a year ago, different type of guard, but nevertheless, a guard who reclassed up last year during the conference play portion of the year at North Carolina last year, 44.9% from the field, 16.7% from three, 67.3% on free throws, and scored 8 points per game. So for a guy to come in that young and simply just post the counting numbers, I know like points per game is like the most basic stat that you can produce. But I think just showing the ability that you can come in and put up buckets is at least indicative of something, even if it's just trust from the coaching staff as a freshman to be given that sort of offensive burden. Let's get sort of the bad stuff out of the way with Fears. So the negatives are he is not a great finisher right now. So he gets to the rim quite a bit. So in the half court, 37% of his shots come at the rim. Historically, if you were looking at guys who basically like play the one in college, that's a really nice level of rim pressure. Like that is a higher tier, like top 20 percentile of guards who stick in the NBA mark. So he's getting inside. The reason for that is his handle. He is very slick, very slippery, very shifty. He's got a great counter back. He hits some nice spin moves yesterday against UConn. Like, phenomenal command over the ball, really good footwork, really able to get to his spots. And I think if you want to really buy the upside with Walter Clayton, or with Walter Clayton, sorry, someone posted his name in the chat, with Jeremiah Fears, a lot of it is going to come down to buying what he is able to do from a self-creation standpoint, given how rare it is. Really, really great in terms of getting to his spots with the ball in his hands and doing it as such a young player at a power conference is exceedingly impressive. The downside of that is that while he got to the rim a lot, he was very inefficient at the rim. So he made 44.5% of his half-court rim attempts. That's like opposite end of the spectrum. That is bottom 20 percentile for guards that stick in the NBA. The guards who were really bad finishers who tend to stick, you sort of get a blend of two different types of player. You get the super athletic guys who hadn't really figured it out yet. So you get like your DeJounte Murray's, your Bruce Brown's. Like I mentioned this in my VJ Edgecom article. It's actually pretty common for guys that are super athletic to just like smoke their layups in college. Like Jaylen Brown is another one. Amen Thompson in OTE, Asar Thompson in OTE, both had pretty poor half-court finishing numbers. That's something you see quite a bit. And then the other just sort of like touch-reliant guards, your Emmanuel Quickleys, Devontae Graham, like those kind of guys. And then like Cole Anthony, which like, you know, he's fine. So generally speaking, you're dealing with better finishers here. And I don't know that Fears like really fits into either bucket. Like he's a good athlete. He's quick. He's shifty, has good footwork, solid dunk numbers for a guard overall, but he's not DeJounte Murray like coming out. Like he's not that type of athlete. And he's also not like a mega touch guy. So like, I get that he was a really young player in a league that is very difficult to play in. My skepticism here would be that I don't think there's like a super obvious path for him to become a better finisher. Obviously it's like getting stronger, but that's still just like, okay, well like relative to his peers, is he going to be, you know, stronger than they are thing. Cause he wasn't a good finisher at lower levels either. Like if you look at his Compass numbers, if you look at his AAU numbers, he's never been good at the rim. Like there's no point in his career where he has been good at the rim. The next common criticism that you hear is like, okay, well, you know, his team's not very good. But if you look at the on-off numbers, so I'm on Hoop Explorer, the on-off numbers for Jeremiah Fears are like not super needle moving. Like their net rating offensively is 0.4 better with him on the court and like 2.1 better defensively with him on the court, which is honestly a little surprising. But like I think the Oklahoma from like an NBA prospect perspective is not exactly talent rich, but I think for a college basketball team the context is better than people realize. And I think examples of this you see throughout the year where there were games where like Fears did not play a lot of minutes despite not really being in a foul trouble. I'm trying to pull up some examples of that, but there was a stretch in the middle of the season where like he was just kind of getting yanked quite a bit. Yeah, there was a game against Texas A&M where he only had three fouls and he only played 19 minutes. A game against Auburn where he played 25 minutes. A game against Georgia where he played 22 minutes. Like there were times where like Porter Moser just realized, hey, my best path to winning is just not playing this guy right now, which is really concerning. The mid-range stuff is good. In the mid-range, 45.6% in the half court. Like I mentioned, the stop-start, the hesitation, ability to separate, like that is there. And he's found ways to be efficient there. The pull-up range does not expand to three yet. He was, I think, around 22% on his pull-up threes this season. Let's see, 20.5%. He did make 36.1% of his catch-and-shoot threes. So this is where the shooting, you can kind of talk yourself into it a little bit. Really good mid-range pull-up numbers. Bad pull-up numbers. Good off the catch from three, and a really excellent free throw shooter. And a guy who took a ton of free throws, 85.1% from the free throw line on over six attempts per game. And that is an area, again, where he has just not historically been very good. So this isn't like a Tyrese Maxey situation where there were strong priors. 26.9% from three in EYBL play at Compass. His last season there, he was 25% from three. Like, this is a case of, like, we just have not seen him make threes yet. Like, this is going to be something that has to come along. And where it gets dicey is the playmaking. So he averaged 4.1 assists to 3.4 turnovers per game. Relative to what I would call, like, the other, like, up and down playmaking freshmen, so your Jace Richardsons and your Kasperis Yakishonises, I feel the least confident in Fears as a playmaker. Where I do want to give him credit is, I think from a assist standpoint, he does get robbed a little bit. Like, there was a lot of passes in that game the other day where, like, he didn't play with a lob jogger, right? Like, you look at Kasperis and he has Merez Johnson, who he can throw lobs to. He has Ivicic, who he can kind of play a give-and-go two-man game with. Like, Fears, I mean, like, I guess Northweather shoots threes, but what is, like, he scores, like, 3 points a game. You know what I mean? Like, there's not really a great, like, lob target or floor spacing big man option. Like, most of the shooters are guards. Like, it's harder for him to run, like, simple point guard actions and find simple point guard targets to get easy assists. With that being said, I think he had the fewest impressive passes out of that list. Where I think Jace Richardson has a huge leg up out of that group is Jace just, like, doesn't really ever do anything frustrating. Like, also has a really great handle, also really shifty. And he misses some reads, doesn't have the most advanced view of the floor, but Jace isn't really going to do anything that's going to make a coach pull their hair out. Fears and Kasperis, on the other hand, will. And a lot of Fears' turnovers are ones that he tries to force through just, like, super tight windows that don't exist. Kasperis does that too. I would say the difference, though, is that I've seen Kasperis make advanced reads and execute on them, with Fears, like, I just didn't really see a whole lot of that. So that's where this gets really murky for him, right? Is, like, this is a guy who undeniably took on a massive usage rate. Look, freshmen who carry over a 30 usage rate, that's a phenomenal indicator. Just the fact that you were allowed to play with the ball in your hands that much, be a winning team, be in, you know, a 9 seed in the NCAA tournament. This isn't a team that stunk either. That incredibly impressive. Usage, I am extremely usage-pilled. Generally, the guys who stick in the NBA, even as role players, were guys that played the biggest role in college and managed to pare that down into a role that works in the NBA. Where I work with Jeremiah, where I worry about Jeremiah Fears is just, like, what am I paring down to? I understand the engine bet, like, the offensive engine bet, because, like, guards generally tend to get quite a bit better at making reads. We've seen it with guys like Isaiah Collier this past year. We've seen it with guys like Keyonte George, who is an extremely frustrating decision maker. Talk about a guy who got too much dip on his chip at times, you know, during his Baylor career. Like, both those guys, assist to turnover wise, pretty solid in the NBA. Like, not guys who, you know, they're struggling, but it's more their inefficiency and struggles with the ball in the basket than it is their decision making. So there's reason for optimism there. There's a reason for optimism based on him performing so well at such a young age. So I think you can really talk yourself into this engine bet of, like, this guy, if he figures out the reads, the 3-point range expands out to three when he's already great in the mid range. He's an assassin there. He's excellent at the free throw line. Like, that's not an unreasonable expectation. Then we're working with, like, a guy who can get to his spots at all three levels. And even if he's just making the basic reads at that point, you can kind of get away with it. Like, if he's just, like, a secondary scorer at that point, like, that's fine. Where I worry about Fears is that it is going to be really hard for him out of the gate, given his lack of size, the fact that he's, like, a good athlete, not a great one, the fact that he does not have a reliable 3-point shot yet, the fact that he's not going to be able to finish that well when he gets to his spots inside, the fact that he doesn't have a great avenue to finishing, and the fact that he's, like, quite bad defensively. Like, he's got a good steal rate, and that does mean something. Like, the 3.1 steal rate and his ability to just, like, display burst getting into passing lanes is nice. He ends up behind the play so often. off the ball. And maybe that's the usage and you can talk yourself into that too. But like generally, okay, so if you don't think he's a star, like if you don't think he is a star player, then you're dealing with like a point guard who's like maybe an okay shooter that doesn't have that advanced a view of the floor and it's like a pretty bad defender. And it's like, okay, well, like how valuable is that? Like, what is that worth in the draft? It's tricky, man. This is a guy that I'm gonna lose sleep over because the highs are so high. But if he ends up like hitting in sort of like a Colin Sexton-y way, it's like even like the microwave bench scorer, I guess like Peyton Pritchard is kind of like that. But like he came into the league much older. It's just like a different thing. Like it's just, I have a really hard time. And I'm trying to avoid like archetype bias. Like him and Jace are probably the two guys I'm going to do the most work on during my deep dives once the season's completely in the books here. But a guy who's going to be confusing for NBA teams in my book. I can completely understand the arguments in favor of him. Oh, the other thing I want to give him credit for, his efficiency got way better down the stretch. Like this is a guy who had like a terrible BPM against good teams earlier in the year and then ended the year 20 games against top 50 teams. 4.6 BPM in those games. It's nothing crazy. Like it's not a great number, but that number was like zero at one point, like not all that long ago. So he closed the season playing his best ball against good teams. So like, man, really talented player. Not sure how to peg down the NBA value of it, but boy, did he go out with a bang and kind of given it everything he had over that last stretch. 31 against Missouri, he had a rough one against Texas, but 29 against Georgia, 28 against Kentucky, 20 against Connecticut. Fascinating player who just, whether you're looking at the tape or looking at the numbers, you can make really strong arguments about either way. Very, very intriguing. A guy I would say I'm probably lower on than consensus just because of how much we've seen guards struggle in recent years. Like I was joking to somebody the other day, like I've been radicalized by KJ Simpson and like what a great college player he was. And the fact that he's like maybe the worst player in the NBA this year. Like it's tough to buy it. With some of these smaller guards, obviously different types of players and whatnot. But yeah, I think I'll probably end up lower on consensus than most on Jeremiah Fears, but I completely acknowledge there's a real chance that bites me and that this soundbite is being used to make fun of me a few years from now. With that, we're going to take our first break. Stick with us. We're going to talk Trey Johnson. All right, Trey Johnson time. Talk about another guy who like kind of looked better down the stretch. I'm really interested in Trey Johnson. I was really hard on Trey Johnson. I feel like I was probably harder on him than just about anybody making public facing draft content throughout the year. I was real worried this dude was going to be James Booknight. Early in the year, I think there was a point where he had a usage rate over a 30 and an assist rate under 15. And if you just look at like sub 6'8" guys like that, they all stink. Like it was like a Johnny Davis, James Booknight collective of just guys that did not work out. And boy, was I worried. The other thing I was worried about with Trey Johnson was I thought he was going to be this year's Jacoby Walter. You remember last year, I was really enamored with Jacoby Walter pre-conference play. Conference play gets there and it's like, oh man, like this guy just can't get where he wants on the floor. And now he's a lot easier to guard, and now the three ball's not going in. I don't even know what this dude is anymore. And he ended up really falling down my board. Like, at one point, I was like, should we be talking about Jacoby Walter? Is the guy who could contend for number one? And then by the end of the year, I was like, very end of the first with Jacoby Walter. A lot of similarities with Trey Johnson. The key difference is that Trey Johnson – A, actually made his three-pointers. Very key difference. Trey took 11.4 threes per 100 possessions last year and made 39% of them. Again, we're going to do some table setting just because a lot of these people who are coming in, welcome. We're glad to have you here. Are going to be newer to the draft space. So Trey Johnson, 6'6" freshman at Texas who ended the year averaging 19.9 points per game. We're going to kind of start with the scoring and sort of dovetail out into everything else. Super efficient from three, 39.7% on super high volume and super high difficulty too. So if we pull up the synergy numbers just on the three ball alone, 42.9% from three on a pick and roll ball handler. as a pick and roll ball handler. You think guys are going to go under against him in the NBA? No, no, no. 44.2% on threes in transition and 54.8% on threes coming off of screens, 41.7 coming off of handoffs. Not the most athletic, like shifty guy, but I think there's a real clear off-ball value here as far as what this guy can do off the ball. If you run a system where he's going to be moving off the ball, getting into his shot from deep, there is immediately something for him to do. Absolutely love that element of his game. The other thing with Trey that we'll touch on the scoring front, really, really bad finisher. And unlike Jeremiah Fears, does not pressure the rim. So he, and this is not uncommon for a shooter. So under 17% of Trey Johnson's half court shots came at the rim. That's fairly common for a like wing shooter. So if I look at other guys who had similar marks that have stuck in the NBA, that was true of Desmond Bane. It was true of Duncan Robinson, Malik Monk. It's true of Quentin Grimes, actually. Gary Trent, Isaiah Joe. Like, for the type of player that you were most likely expecting to be if you're pegging a median outcome, it's fine. It's kind of fine that he doesn't get to the rim all that often. The issue is he is really bad when he gets there too, 46.5%. And again, a guy where like there's just not really a great path to get there. His body is like developed, but he's still not very strong. He doesn't get up off the floor very well. And he does not have that separation ability. Like the difference between him and Fears, which again, they're different positions, but Fears just has so much shake and snap and speed on everything that he does. With Trey Johnson, it's like if you press up on him pretty tight, like he just doesn't have a way to get you off him. He's not able to use his shoulders to get space the way a DeMar DeRozan is, for example, or anything like that. Like, it's just once you're tight on him, you are tight on him, and that's that. He was like shot 36% on a ton of mid-range shots this year, just because like, if you smother him, like he's got to deal with it. That is where I would say I differ from consensus on Trey Johnson is the upside case. Like, I don't really buy the idea of him being like Tyler Hero is a name I see thrown around a lot. I just think there's a severe quickness difference. I think Trey Johnson will likely measure a whole lot better than Tyler Hero. And I think that there might be like a safer defensive floor in some ways than that type of guy. But I just don't think that there is going to be a whole lot of on-ball juice at the NBA level. Where I want to give him credit, though, is he passed the ball a lot better as the year went on. I mentioned that bad assist rate that he had earlier in the year. He got that up to 16.5% for the full season, but in conference play, he got it up to 19.3%. Still took some really frustrating shots. Still kind of had to because this Texas team, a lot of guys were just not doing a whole lot down the stretch. Yeah, I buy his ability to just like make solid basic decisions off the ball, like when doubled. He took some frustrating shots still, but that's like within him. We've seen him do it. And like there's some real like capable flashes too, where it's like, oh wow, that was like an intermediate read or a read on the go that was like nice, like genuinely nice to see from that type of shooter. That bodes well because like again, you gotta do a lot and pare it down. And we've seen that from Trey Johnson. The one kind of pare it down concern is he is a real stop and survey guy. And we've seen how that's affected a guy like Cam Whitmore, who I was really high on coming into the league, is just like, man, when you stop and survey, it can really bring things to a halt. That's got to change with Trey Johnson. That's like the one offensive adjustment that I really want to see that I think is super attainable. Or if it finishing, it's like, it's a little dicey. If Trey can just become a more consistent 0.5 player, that's going to be a huge difference maker for him. Defensively, I don't really love what I saw. 1.7 steal rate, 0.9 block rate. Pretty bad numbers on both fronts. Just not a defensive playmaker. Where I'll give him like some credit, I guess, is like he's not a disaster defensively. At the point of attack, I've always said he does a good job of like making guys wear his frame. Like he'll just kind of put his body on you, moves his feet pretty well for the most part. Nothing crazy, nothing disastrous. And off the ball, like I feel like he's generally just like in the right spots. It's where you see the lack of athleticism again. He's not going to dart a passing lane. He's not going to show a ton of bounce on a contest and block a shot on the perimeter or fly over from the weak side to block a shot at the rim. that's not really within him. But on a basic fundamental level, like it's not terrible. Like he monitors man and ball just fine. Like he doesn't end up behind the play as often as a guy like Fears does. Trey Johnson's tricky for me because we know how valuable shooting is. We know how valuable good decision-making is. And this is a guy who, you know, say what you want about the way he went about getting the assists and some of the assists he didn't get, but it is a guy who is 6 foot six, who drained a ton of movement threes on and off the ball and had a really nice assist to turnover ratio as a freshman playing in the SEC. Then in the day, it's like kind of hard to not, you know, be a little excited about that, if nothing else, especially if you think that he can continue to not get killed defensively at the next level. Killian Wright asks, thoughts on Zach LaVine as a player comp for Trey Johnson? They're just in different worlds athletically, is like what it boils down to for me. Like Zach LaVine, you know, we've seen the dunk contests, but his athletic testing coming out was ridiculous. Trey Johnson doesn't have the separation, doesn't have the bounce. Like that's where like I'm sort of lower on some of the ceiling outcome ideas for Trey Johnson. But I think that what he's good at is exceedingly important. And I think the fact that he was so effective for Texas as a freshman is really meaningful. So for me, he's a top 10 guy. He's not a guy that I have like jumping into that, like VJ, Dylan, Coop, Bailey mix even. Like I'd rather of like the poor finishing shooters, I think I'd almost rather swing on Ace, even though like his strength has a long way to go. And even though Trey probably has the better like technical handle, like some of the flashes of slipperiness out of Ace and the fact that he can at least make plays on defense when he's a little bit more engaged, I'd rather roll the dice on that. I just can't get him into like that top ish tier. But again, like cannot overstate the shooting, the decision making, and the ability to just not get killed on defense. It's all there. I think he's a really solid role player bet, if nothing else. So that does it for Trey Johnson. We're going to hit the mid-major dudes, Bennett Sturts and Rashier Fleming, coming out of the break. Stick with us. Let's do Bennett Sturts. First off, kind of despondent about this one, I'm not going to lie. Bennett Sturts was a guy I watched just carve up that MTE early on in the year, where they like just breezed through three high major teams, including Vanderbilt, who like ended up being quite a bit better than I think we thought they were going to be. And I was like, oh, sick. I can't wait to do this guy for no stone unturned next year. Never mind. That's fine. People are talking about him. Like he's probably going to be a first round pick or in that conversation. So much for that. I'm a little upset about it. I'm not going to lie. Would have really liked to be like, oh, I was really early on him. Can't really do that now. It's fine. I'll live. But yeah, Bennett Sturts, a 6'4 guard out of Drake, who put up back-to-back 20-point games in the NCAA tournament and captured the imagination of a lot of people in the process. 19.2 points per game on 49.8, 39.5, 79.4 splits. We'll start with the scoring again. I think this is where I'm like really bullish on Bennett Sturts relative to a lot of people. My concern with Sturts was how well is he going to separate and how well is he going to continue to get into the paint when he plays high level competition. I actually thought he did a pretty good job in the NCAA tournament. So in the half court in those games, generated 7 half court shots at the rim and was 5 for 7 on those. And I thought, and like he settled for a lot of runners. He took 6 runners in those 2 games, but I thought his ability to like handle aggressive ball screens and just work his way around the defense, the number of times that he attacked from the top of the key rather than off of like a side pick and roll or something like that and still managed to get inside was really impressive. The amount of times he got 2 feet in the paint, I was thrilled with. I was really impressed by. And then over the course of the season, he's demonstrated incredible touch inside. He's made 70.6% of his half-court rim attempts. Now, I know that all in all, like the level of rim protection he's facing in the Missouri Valley was like not awesome, right? Like respect to Cooper Schweiger, but like there's a difference between Cooper Schweiger and Kamen Malawak when it comes to who you'd rather finish against the basket. I sorry for the stray for Cooper Schwager. Interesting kind of 3-and-D-ish big man out of that league. The bottom line is, like, I want to see dominance from guys playing in mid-major conferences, and that's what we got out of Bennett Sturts, dominant at the rim, and really able to keep guys honest out of ball screens. The mid-range numbers dropped a little bit because the NCAA tournament games, but still made 37% of his pull-up twos, which, like, not in that Jeremiah Fierce category, but he is capable of pulling it from three already. He took 120 pull-up threes on the year and made 36.7% of them. Real comfortable punishing people who go under on ball screens and will pull up from, like, logo range, like deep range from Bennett Sturts from three. The other nice aspect of his game is he's really good off the catch too, just under 46% on catch and shoot threes. Given his ability to kind of, like, get 2 feet in the paint consistently, I think that carries as far as, like, off ball value goes, and just an underrated athlete in general. On the year, I think Sturts ended up with, like, 13 dunks, which by guard standards is good. Like, I know, again, level of competition is easier, so it's not like he's having to beat, you know, the best athletes in the world down the floor, but that's like what DeJounte Murray did in college. That's more than Shea. That's more than Cason Wallace had in college. Like, again, the relative level of competition is what it is. I think, like, two of those came in the half court, maybe one of them, and that was it. But just the fact that, like, he has that kind of, like, underrated bounce, I think is important. And then, yeah, can really shoot. So very translatable skill set, can score at all three levels, which is what you want out of a guard. Does have to get stronger. I think that was one of the bigger things I noticed. Like, he did have a bit of a hard time holding his line. But I think in terms of, like, the speed and the bounce, he's kind of better than people realize and give him credit for. And then a really stellar playmaker, 5.7 assists at 2.0 turnovers on the year, had an assist rate of 34.2 and a turnover rate of 11.2. My one gripe with the passing is I think there can be times where he leaves his feet and throws a difficult one, but, like, all in all, that is a super, super high assist rate and a really, really low turnover rate. So as far as, like, guys who've stuck that had, like, a plus 30 assist rate and a sub 12 turnover rate, it's really, like, just Monte Morris. Like, that is really rare as far as levels of ball control. And you got to consider too, this Drake team outside of Sturts and Mascari had very little shooting on it. Didn't have a traditional big man for him to really throw lobs to. Like, there was no, like, easy escape valve on this team for him to just routinely hit to kind of get himself out of trouble. So to be the number one guy on the scouting report night in, night out, and take that good a care of the ball, like, I kind of don't care who you're playing against. That's unbelievable. And then defensively, the smarts, the instincts, it's all still there. Like, 3.5 steal rate, 0.9 block rate. Good numbers overall. And, like, also, like, just good hands when he guards the point of attack. That's another area where he's going to have to get stronger. Like, we see just bigger and bigger guys getting mismatch on him. Like, especially game the other day, where, oh, who was it? There was, like, a 6'4 guard that I was never like, oh yeah, he's, like, tiny, that was getting mismatch targeted. I think it was Andrew Nembhard, where I was just like, oh, like, you don't really see, like, okay, like, we're at that point now where it's like, even that level of size, if a team realizes they have an advantage over it, they'll try and, like, take you inside. Gonna have to get stronger. That's, like, the one thing. Look, I think this guy's gonna be a point guard. I think he's gonna be a point guard right now. Like, one that you can play in games right now. The two kind of comps I made throughout the year were Scottie Pippen Jr. and Monte Morris, because it was, like, the super high usage guy who was still managing to find ways to score all over the court, was, like, the Scottie Pippen Jr. end of it. And then the Monte Morris was the decision making. But yeah, like, he's just got, you know, he's better at running the offense than Scottie was, and he's a lot more potent of a scoring threat than Monte Morris was. Like, I'm in first round, sign me up. Like, I'm in on the Bennett Sturts experience completely. I've seen people speculate on him going back. My knowledge of the NIL market, there's work to be done there. So, like, we'll see. On one hand, I get it, but it's also like, you don't want to risk Hunter Salasing yourself, so to speak. Like, you don't want to go back after you had this insanely productive season and then not match those expectations. So I think there'd be a real risk. I think there'd be a real risk in going back. If you were to me, the move is like, go in, capitalize on this. You average 20 a game in six games against high major opponents. Like, what else is there to prove? I realize I'm saying that someone who's high on him. But yeah, really great player. Big fan. I also want to talk about Rashier Fleming. St. Joe's was in the NIT. They lost in a game against UAB. It was kind of a weird game where like both, I thought both Lindeborg and Fleming had their struggles. But I thought of the two and the ways that they struggled, I was more encouraged about Fleming's NBA translation than Lindeborg's. Fleming shot wasn't going in, was 2 for 8 from the field, had a couple turnovers. Lindeborg was just kind of inefficient. For Fleming, it just felt like the shot wasn't going in. For Lindeborg, it felt like, oh man, like when he's met with another big body, it's just a lot harder for him to get to his spots. This isn't about Yaxel, though. It's about Fleming. The reason I wanted to focus on Fleming is just because I thought, what a phenomenal year and like what an incredible growth trajectory this guy's on. 14.7 points per game, 8.5 rebounds per game. He is a 6'9", like 240-pound guy. And I mentioned that we were going to circle back to the Rorschach test thing. I feel like Fleming is one of those as well. And Norton Rad says, I like both of them, even though Lindenberg turns it over a lot. I love both those dudes too. Those are both first-round guys for me. With Fleming, what makes him particularly interesting is the Rorschach test thing. You talk to some people, and they're like, oh, yeah, he's a forward. You talk to other people, they're like, oh, he's a hybrid big. I think that the fact that you have disagreement on what his NBA role will be exactly is actually encouraging. I think that gives him a couple different avenues to find success at the NBA level. If he's not cutting it as a, you know, small but a big, maybe you can try him out on the forward, vice versa. Like, there are outs here. There are multiple outs present that most prospects don't typically have. If you want to be skeptical, I think the big obvious things that you can point to with Fleming, the first one is sort of like the usage and like decision-making and assist rate. So 8.5 assist rate is pretty low. Usage was pretty low though too, 21.2 usage rate. Played alongside two really ball dominant guards in Eric Reynolds II and Xavier Brown, both good players. You know, I'm not saying they should have been like letting Rashier run the point, but that's what St. Joe's ran. That's why the usage was lower. That's why, you know, the assist numbers were what they were. I think where I'm a little bit more encouraged on that front is if you look at the overall numbers. So he averaged 1.3 assists to 1.5 turnovers. That equates to like a 0.866 assist turnover ratio, which isn't good, but it's not like disastrous by forward standards. Like that's around where like Torian Prince, Pascal Siakam, Rui Hachimura, and Tumani Kamara were in their pre-draft seasons. Like they were all at or below that mark. So if you're kind of in that mix with that level of size, you can kind of get away with it. Like I don't think that's the red flag that people think it is. And then the other thing people harp on is like, is the shot real? So he was 39% from three on 8.5 attempts per game. He was a 74.3% free throw shooter. It's like early in the year, the free throw percentage wasn't good, but I think that just kind of evened out. I buy the shot. It is on a consistent upward trajectory. He's always been extremely willing for a player his size. And he's just gotten better at it every year. It looks a little bit more smooth. If you look at his shot like 2 years ago, it looked like he was shooting it on the way down quite often. That's not really a thing anymore. Like he's just a lot better at that. And then defensively, played the four predominantly this year, still had a 4.9 block rate next to Justice Ojabor, who was like one of the best shot blockers in the country, like a guy who I wish could do a little bit more because he would be really interesting if he could, but he can't, but that's fine. And then Rashier Fleming also had a 2.6 steal rate this year. It's like a really impressive defensive playmaker who can like dart passing lanes, block shots around the rim as a helper, or it kind of anchored the defense out of a ball screen. Has some things he needs to clean up, technically speaking, in terms of like how he closes out, his positioning, the angles that he takes in ball screens. But I always like when a guy is productive, but there's low-hanging fruit that he can pick up, and we've seen him continue to pick up that low-hanging fruit. we're dealing with a guy who is so much better year over year, as a scorer, as a passer, as a decision maker. Like the game, so I did Rashear Fleming for No Stone Unturned 2 years ago after his freshman year. And I was just so interested in him, and he was just like this big ball of clay. And he has improved so much on every front. Like there is so fewer frustrating decisions, so many better like flashes as a passer, so many better moments guarding ball screens, that like this is a guy who I think clearly wants to get better at basketball and is doing it. There's rumors he's got like a 7'4", 7'5" wingspan. I'm just really intrigued. Like I think if he's like Rui Hachimura, who plays better defense and shoots actual threes, that's a great outcome. If he is, you know, more of a big and he's like Chris Boucher or Jalen Smith, but actually physically strong enough to like bang it out in the post against true bigs on the low block, that's a really good outcome. Like I think the number of outs, the size, the measurables, the shooting, in the raw production, where we've seen him continue to do the things better that he's going to be asked to keep doing better, I'm really into it. I'm really into the Rashear Fleming experience, even if he kind of cooled off a little bit down the stretch. I just think anytime you're dealing with a guy who has such an impressive developmental runway, like this is a guy who, like, I don't even think started for his high school team, and now he's turned into this, like, man. Rashear Fleming's my kind of guy. I wish the decision making was like a little bit more reliable. If it was, like, we'd be talking lottery. But if you look at a lot of guys, like a forbidden comp that I like to throw out for a lot of these like forwardy kind of guys is Lauri Markkanen. Like, and he's like, Rashear's just not like as smooth with the ball as Lowry. But a lot more likely to return two-way value coming into the league as a prospect. And a ton of firepower and like a devastating roller. That was the other thing I wanted to touch on with the scoring with him, is it like, I think he made like 70% as a roll of his twos as a roll man this year. Like he does like simple big guy stuff well too. So I'm really interested in Rashear Fleming. I feel like I've seen a lot of people start to like kind of turn back on him because he had a bit of a cooler start to end the year. I think there's like skepticism about the shot that I don't feel is warranted based on the data. Like even by forward standards, a 74% free throw percentage in a pre-draft season grades out pretty well. Like that's even like by forward standards, that's good. Generally, let me see kind of where we're at as far as the median on that goes, as far as like guys who've stuck. I think it's like right around 74. Yeah, median is like 73.2. So like for his position, he's actually like a pretty good free throw shooter. It's not really like a concern. So yeah, totally buy the shot. Love the measurables, love the consistent track record of improvement with him. So that's going to do it. We're going to wrap up this episode here. I appreciate everyone who tuned in live. I appreciate the comments and questions as we went throughout the episode. I'm loving this NCAA tournament, man. I wish we had a little bit more chaos, but what can you do? So in the meantime, check out my column tomorrow. I've got one about Baba Miller. That's probably a guy you haven't really thought about a whole lot lately, but maybe you should. Maybe you should think about Baba Miller a little bit because he's doing some interesting stuff. Check that out. Follow me at Boundboards. Follow at No Ceilings NBA. Stay tuned. Tyler Metcalf and the whole crew really have been killing it with these March Madness recaps. I really enjoyed listening to those. Just first thing in the morning, pop those on, get a feel for what's going on in the tournament. Yeah, so keep checking those out as well. That'll do it. Thank you all so much for joining us. We'll be back again next week. We'll see you then.